Yeah, Val East has called in, other than that, no one else has called in yet. So I'll give you participant list.
Oh, okay. The HESS committee to order, it's February 9th, and it's 3:04 PM. My name's Con Bundy, I'll be presiding today, and if we could have a roll call, please, Dan.
Representative Tui?
Here.
Representative Bundy?
Here.
Representative Gary Davis?
Here.
Representative Bryce? Representative Betty Davis? Representative Cott? Representative Nicolai?
Here.
Representative Goldberg?
Here.
Representative Vizi?
Here.
And we have a quorum present. I also would like to mention that we are teleconferencing today, and joining us in the teleconference will be Anchorage, Delta Junction, Juneau, Ketchikan, Kenai, Soldotna, Tok, and Valdez. We are hearing House Bill 82, School Construction, and House Bill 83, Appropriation for School Construction Fund. This hearing is for informational purposes only. We will not be passing this bill out today, simply for discussion. I'd like to note for the record that Representative Cott has joined us at 3:05. And as is usual, anyone wishing to testify, please sign up. If they haven't signed up here locally, they'll be signing up in their teleconference areas, and state your name for the record and your association. If you are testifying via teleconference, if you'd give us your address, telephone number, and who you're representing, we'd appreciate that. And also remind you that because this is teleconference, please remember to use your microphones, and if you would switch your mics off between testimony, it would be helpful. With that, I'd like to turn the agenda over to Commissioner Covey and Mr. Bader, who will be presenting testimony, I assume, on House Bill 82 first. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we are happy to do them however you'd like. We can do 82 first and then 83.
Unless there's any preference with the committee, we'll go ahead and go numerically. I'd also like to note that Representative Bryce has joined us at 3:07.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Jerry Covey. I'm Commissioner of Education. And I'm here today to present an overview of House Bill 82 and 83 and provide the committee with whatever information we might need to better understand these bills and begin a thorough discussion of them. With me at my left is Gary Bader, who's our Director of Administrative Services. Gary's division does oversee capital projects and the capital project list for the school districts in Alaska. Gary will be sharing with you some more detailed information about the bill and responding to questions you may have. In regard to the bill, House Bill 82 specifically is an act relating to school construction grants and major maintenance grants. What we had done is through the Alaska 2000 process and significant committee work in the Alaska 2000 committees, we had a number of people who focused on school construction issues. That committee was comprised of legislators from both the House and the Senate last year. It was comprised of school district facility people from rural and urban Alaska. We also had architects, engineers, cost estimators, and people from municipalities that cared for school facilities. The large districts, the Kenai's, the Fairbanks type districts had their borough facility people involved. The committee worked for a period of about 4 months, putting together some 12 recommendations, which really comprised a pretty collective approach to the whole facilities issue of what they thought we should do and how we should do it. We, of course, took that through the hearing process and boiled it down, made some changes after the public hearings, and developed this bill from that. We're trying to accomplish two things in this bill, ultimately. We're trying to develop a practical plan and present to you a practical plan to address our school facility needs all over the state of Alaska. And we're trying to do it in a way that will garner support from both urban and rural in the process. We, as a base of operations, must, we're required by statute and regulation to work with the, what we have known as the House Bill 37 process, or the process that was in place. And that is the basis on which this plan was developed. What we're attempting to do is to separate, to identify two different grant categories. The first of them being school major maintenance is one category, and school construction being the other. That's essentially what we're after here. The school construction grants are the health, life, safety issues that we commonly hear of, and they're the overcrowded schools. In fact, on the list and in your packets, these comprise priority one and two of the grant groups. And the major maintenance grants is the other category that we're recommending. That really is your three and four. That's your code violations and major maintenance or repair categories. Now, the process that's in place currently requires us to go start at the top of the list with priority one and work our way right down through. Currently, we have in the initial plan that was developed some $25 million for capital. In priority one alone, there are approximately $75 million worth of projects. And I think that clearly illustrates the situation we've been faced with now for the last 3 years. We've been into capital. We've never gotten past the first 15 projects or so. And the list behind that in category two, which is overcrowded schools, has grown by leaps and bounds. What's happened also is that people who had problems in categories three and four that were the major maintenance and the code violations, they quickly figured out how to have their problems go from a code violation to a health and life safety issue. So they jumped from category four or three all the way to one, and nothing ever happened to two, where the greatest need is in terms of overcrowding. So the process we have in place has not worked. It has not worked in part because it has not been funded. So in our process, we tried to first of all, provide it significantly increase the amount of funding available, and secondly, to spread it out as best we could, given the constraints we had. What you, I'm sure, have determined by now is that certain school districts don't show up very well in this process. And there's some reasons for that I'd like to share with you. First of all, because the funding for this has been very low historically, some districts just haven't taken it very seriously. They've found ways around it through other legislative capital grants. They've taken care of many of their school construction needs and not messed around with this. Others have followed through with it significantly and show up very well on it. There's a number of reasons why districts have or have not taken this process seriously. And all of those lead us to the fact that we as a department can only deal with the projects on that list as we laid this out. And so I'll be talking more with you about that later. Very quickly, this bill would require all districts to participate at a level that they can afford in sharing the expense of any new school or any funding for either new construction or major maintenance. And it has a formula which is in effect similar to the governor's matching grant concept, only this one is more specifically detailed out based upon local school district's ability to participate. And for the what we've done is we've taken the taxable and real personal property in a district, the true value of that, and combine that with the average daily membership, which gives us an amount of wealth per student in each school district. And that's where we've developed the scale, the sliding scale that's in the bill for districts to participate. We have also, in those districts, the REAA districts, which are not organized, structured it in such a way that we could phase them into a local contribution. That was based upon 75% of the poorest organized community in the state's assessed value, that community being St. Mary's. So we took the assessed value for St. Mary's and determined what 75% of that was, and then we set that as the maximum contribution for REAA school districts and set them up so that they would phase into that level of contribution over a four-year period, which is 3.8% of the request. Essentially, that's the overview of the bill. Very quickly, I would be happy to answer any questions at this point.
Thank you, Commissioner Covey. Again, I'd just like to restate my support for the principle of local support in school construction. I think that's certainly an important direction in which to move. If I may, I'll ask a couple of questions, and I'd like to open it up to the committee and then to teleconferencing for questions. There's been some discussion of raising the minimum number of students required to keep some of these rural schools open that have very low enrollments. Have you given any thought to how that might affect this list?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, we have. The way in which we're doing that, however, does not particularly relate to the statute. We are considering that in the list. Through regulation, we are increasing the minimum school size between now and the end of the decade. Currently, there is no minimum size. I have arbitrarily set it at 5, and we have a phase-in program that we will be using to increase the minimum school size to 10, ultimately. And that's as we're currently planning to do it.
So you're... you don't envision that consolidating schools will affect the list that you've given us at this time?
Mr. Chairman, we consider that, first of all, that will not affect the list that's there at this time, and specifically because we expect that list will change considerably. It will change for a number of reasons. One, with a significant level of funding, districts will give a lot more attention to the list. With a local contribution required, districts will begin eliminating some of the projects that they would have liked if the state were going to pay the entire bill. So we will see a significant change in the projects on that list if this is funded.
Thank you, and that brings me to my next question, and has there been support from the smaller districts that are lower on the scale that may indeed then have to make contributions of land or something like that for their 3.8%. And when would you expect this reprioritizing of the list to occur?
Sure. In terms of support, support is mixed from local districts. Some feel that it's an encroachment upon them and that they should not have to make any local contribution. In terms of how that will affect the list, we believe that the list will, for FY95, when school districts this spring begin the process of looking at their six-year plan, if they in fact are aware that this process has been funded, we receive their information in late summer, early fall, and we begin our prioritizing process. We expect that the next list we get for FY95 would be dramatically different than the current one.
And again, just when would you anticipate that list to be put together, or when these requests would come in, and just approximate
date? I mean, it's going to be summer, fall.
Oh, we will get the list. The next list from districts will be to us by early fall. We have to prioritize it and get it out by November. I think it's November 1st. So, and that would be the FY95 list. So if, in fact, the legislature passes and funds this legislation, for the next list that we bring to the legislature would reflect change, we believe, many, many changes, because not only are we making the changes I've talked about, we're also setting standards, construction standards for schools that prevents them from underbuilding or overbuilding schools. In other words, municipalities do currently have building codes, where REAA districts do not, and we have a great variation. We also have a situation where some urban districts have overbuilt at state expense, and we're structuring this in a way that if districts choose to overbuild, they would have to pay for the additional components in the building. And that, again, will cause some changes in the list.
Again, thank you for your answers. I'd like to note for the record that Representative Davis, Betty Davis, has joined us at 3:20, and would now like to open for questions from the committee. The people on teleconferencing for the committee's information are simply going to be observers at this point. We don't have anyone testifying, but I'd like to encourage those that are listening in, if they do have questions, we'd be happy to take their questions. Representative Bryce, you had a question.
Thank you, Chairman Bundy. I do have a quick question relating to, maybe I missed it, but why was the priority 1 and 2 schools put together as opposed to the priority 1, 3s, and 4s breaking out into a separate subject, priority 2 schools?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Bryce, the way we constructed it was to break it into two grants, because under the way we're currently structured under House Bill 37, we would be required to start at priority 1 and go right down the list until we run out of money. And the reason we wanted to vary from that were actually two reasons. One, we wanted to ensure that all districts receive some direct benefit right away. And secondly, we felt that by placing half of the resource at problems, or directing it at problems that were still small in nature, we could prevent them from becoming bigger, more expensive problems.
Yeah, Representative Bryce, go ahead.
I appreciate the need to address priority 1s and 2s, and the need to deviate completely, as far as I'm concerned, from the old HB 37. It has proven to be more burdensome than anything else. And I think because of that, from my understanding, the strong desire to throw out HB 37 completely, then start all over is probably, it would probably be appropriate to even consider breaking out maintenance and construction and then possibly distinguishing between the two. That's what I've heard from, at least from the people I've talked to up in Fairbanks, that when you start grouping major maintenance or the old priority 1 and the old priority 2s together, it's still going to be the priority 2s taking it in the shorts, especially if not an adequate amount of funding is being appropriated. I would just feel a lot more comfortable with the priority 2s in a category by themselves.
Care to respond there?
Yes, I would, Mr. Chairman, briefly. Representative Bryce, in regards to the process, we have heard some concerns about the HB 37 process once we got into the hearings with the legislature, and are well aware of them as they've been presented to us. In terms of the Category 1 and 2, adequate funding, even with the flaws in the old process, would address priority communities. If, for example, the plan were taken as is presented, it would take all of 1, about 20% of 2s, all of 3s, and about half of 4s. We would then come right back next year and pick up with the 2s, with the overcrowded schools. So it would ultimately address that. But I think it's also important, Mr. Chairman, that I share with the committee that we wanted to bring to you a plan, and we wanted to bring a plan that we felt was rational and defensible and reasonable. What we ultimately want and what the governor wants is to address the needs of our schools. If committee members have some suggestions for strengthening the process or improving it, we're certainly open to that, and we'd like to work with you in whatever way we can.
I appreciate you noting that, and I think I can speak for the committee that this isn't an adversarial relationship that we're looking at, that indeed will ultimately be the goal of all of us. Other questions from committee members?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, please, Representative Beasy.
Mr. Covey.
If you would,
I'm sorry, I've got one. Representative Beasy here. Mr. Covey, Commissioner Covey, I'm sorry. Not having spent a lot of time reading Title 14 in the past and not being familiar with what may be common language, I have a little trouble with the definition here of true value, full and true value. Does this mean, if my recollection of municipal laws are right, which is not necessarily what Alaska statute Title 14 refers to, but does this mean these are going to have to be assessed every year?
Mr. Chairman, if I may defer to Gary Bader.
Please.
I believe these assessments are based upon what the Department of Community and Regional Affairs.
Commissioner, would you share the mic, please?
The assessed values would be published by, not assessed values, but the full and true value would be published by the Department of Community and Regional Affairs and would be on the same schedule that they ordinarily make assessments throughout the state. So we wouldn't be. We're not talking about assessed value per se. We're talking about the full value.
Which, if my recollection of statute is correct, that's what the assessed value is supposed to be.
Okay.
But I'm just trying to clarify that because the wording here to me is a little difficult for me to follow, and I didn't really want to have to dig through all these statute citations to try to understand it. So we get down here to this table where it says full value. For a taxpayer like me, it would make more sense if I just said taxable value per average daily membership in schools. That's the tax base per student is the way I would interpret that.
That's right. We're attempting to basically exclude any exemptions that might be taking place under certain tax codes, and that's why we're using full value.
And then these figures in this table would all increase by 15% over the next 3 years in your proposal, so that if you have a municipality or a political subdivision with a tax base of, and correct me if I'm using the wrong words, but a tax base of $600,000 per student, that they would be expected to pay 55% of all school construction and maintenance costs.
That's correct.
Okay. Mr. Bryce might help me. I really don't remember what the tax. I never looked at tax base per student before. I looked at it per population, but never looked at it per student. I have, like I said, I had a little trouble following that. But then, and Mr. Covey, or Commissioner Covey, explained very well how the reasoning that he came up with, paragraph C, under the same section, where the regional education areas would start off paying 1.4% of their school capital and maintenance costs and graduate to 2.8%. I would just like to express the opinion that if we're expecting to encourage local government units to be responsible for their programs and whatnot, that's just a minusculely small number, especially when you have I think we're talking about an average community being over here in the $100,000 to $200,000 per student taxable tax base range. I don't know that, but I think that's where it falls. Would you just comment on that? I mean,
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beasy, I'd be happy to comment on that. This is Commissioner Covey again. Our intent, we realize that there has been a perspective that's been expressed by some people from urban areas for a long, long time about the concern that there is no contribution for construction or school operation expenses at the local level in our EAAs. And we've spent a lot of time on that. Our committees that developed this plan did focus a lot on that. The reason that we structured it the way that it is we felt that the capital plan that we wanted to bring you was one that would transition us from where we are and position us. We don't know exactly what's going to be happening that far out, but we felt that if the local contribution rate were in fact in place and had been phased in, and the phase-in has some history with new boroughs. They've had the opportunity to phase in their expenses as they've come online. So we kind of took that model. But we felt that although it may not be as much as some people think is appropriate, it is a big departure from where we've been historically, and that it would position us for future changes, whether that was to... It was determined ultimately to increase that local contribution at that point or to maintain it. We wanted to get people where we were going. And I think, to be candid, if I may, Representative, much of Alaska 2000, much of many of the changes we're proposing are, in fact, made to not be overly abrupt. They're made to try to maintain the support and ease people into a different way of doing business. We must remember that these school districts are almost 20 years old and that they have not, in the REAAs, had that obligation. And so we want to kind of move in that direction in a way that we felt would be acceptable. And that's the rationale, sir.
Okay, if I could just kind of one more carry-on question. There's no consideration here for hazard consideration being given to a formula that balances this funding on a per capita basis, which happens to coincide with my thinking of a fair distribution of wealth, with a distribution based on, I suppose you would call this a legal basis here.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chairman, Representative Beasy, if I may, we have given that significant consideration. I'd like to ask Dwayne Guiley, who's the other director that's here, to respond to that, because he worked with the committee directly as they focused on that.
Yes, please, and your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Dwayne Guiley. I'm director of school finance within the Department of Education. The Alaska 2000 Committee on Facilities did consider a proposal that would be based upon per capita funding for construction. What the committee found is that in any proposal that would support per capita funding, we would not be able to clear the existing backlog of life health safety projects and unhoused student projects that exist currently on our prioritized list. The committee felt that a first step would be to attempt to fully fund the list as it currently exists, or some similar list that relates to a needs-based system, and potentially follow on then with a system of per capita funding that might even be rolled into the state foundation formula, as some other states do in funding school construction and major maintenance.
Thank you very much.
And we have other questions for our panel.
Now the middle number's going to be.
If I might, I would like to address an issue that concerns both these bills. That's perhaps the most contentious part of Maynard there's some good ideas, but the contentious part is the funding. And obviously the funding is proposed to come from the permanent fund or the earnings of the permanent fund. And I'd ask if there has been a feedback from the general public other than Alaska 2000 people, since this proposal has been submitted, has there been specific feedback on the funding from the permanent fund earnings? I would encourage all of our committee members to disseminate this information to their constituents, and so we could get a feel for the support in the community. I personally believe that the support for education is very high, but how they feel about Alaska now beginning to spend the earnings of the permanent fund is another issue entirely, and perhaps we need some more feedback. That's a long question, but has there been feedback?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, we have not received a large amount of feedback at this point. It's still fairly early to get that. We are soliciting that, and we have launched a public information campaign which will provide some supporting information about the income source, about the unreserved earnings account, and really what we're identifying them is really extraordinary earnings of the permanent fund, in that they are available after we take into account the fund itself, the dividend program, and the inflation proofing. We are working with the governor's office, and we'll be communicating in a number of ways with people all over and providing you feedback in the near future on that.
I'm very pleased to hear that. I think your educational program in this specific area is very important, because often people hear permanent fund and only think of a fairly narrow perspective. I would like to note for the record that the Kenai Peninsula Borough School District has faxed us a memoranda, and they, with some provisos, are indicating some support for this bill, and we'll certainly see that this is placed as part of our permanent record. Representative Bryce, do you have a question?
Yes, Mr. Commissioner, with your information, you provided us a flow chart. Are we going to go through that?
Yeah, if I might, we'll hold that for just a minute. We'll get Representative Toohey's question, and then we can go through the flow chart if you'd like.
Thank you, Representative Bundy. Commissioner Covey, there are two things that kind of bother me. One is, excuse me, you tell people we're going to the permanent fund and everybody screams, and yet you say it's not the permanent fund, and everybody says, well, it's the corner of the permanent fund. This perception out there is kind of, well, what is it? We need to make that very clear, that this, that the impact of taking this money is going to be, impact us in 20 years on the permanent fund earnings. This is very, very something we must do. And what can we do to keep from getting in this mess again? We need to be able to maintain our buildings. We need to have a one architectural plan for all schools. Why we go out and solicit these great architectural things that the first year they leak. And I'm telling you, Girdwood was a terrible thing. Anchorage has terrible schools that leak. And yet we've spent thousands. We need to have a plan in place that addresses these things, that we should not be funding. And because I think this dipping into this earnings reserve is a one-time, I think it's a one-time deal. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I appreciate your enthusiasm, Representative, for the issue very much. And, you kind of remind me of me as I get cranked up on this. The issue of funding, in fact, there is a way out of this, and that's what we're proposing. We're proposing that that by the use of this unreserved earnings account and applying a significant amount of funding to this problem over the next 4 years would, in fact, address the backlog. Two things will happen. Number one, we will pretty well clean things up. Number two, our bonded indebtedness for schools as a state will be cut just about in half by that time. So we will have actually, I think, about $60 million more available annually that's currently going into the bonding program that we could put into school construction. It is going to continue to be an issue because of our increased student population. The committee that did the work estimate that we are looking at somewhere in the neighborhood of $100 million annually just to address the new student problem, increased enrollment. So we're going to have to continue to put a significant amount into our schools. But if we can wipe out this backlog with this revenue source now, it will set us up very well for the future. Obviously, the reason the governor prefers this over bonding is that ultimately bonding will double the cost in the long run of this construction. And we must address this problem now. In fact, if we're really going to revitalize our school system, we can't do it in the facilities we have. We're, for all the reasons you're well aware of. In terms of a plan, many school districts, some of our larger school districts now do have a planned elementary school, and whenever they need an elementary school, they build that school, and it's transportable from site to site, the plan is, and they know how much it's going to cost them. It's not an extravagant floor plan. Kenai does that, and I believe some other districts are doing that as well. And they're looking hard at that. We are putting in place standards to ensure the quality and also protect the state from extra expenses. So in the long run, I think we can bring all of this back into focus and address it in a meaningful way.
Are you finished, Representative Tui?
Yes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to your tract house school plan. it saves money in residential housing, perhaps it will work. Representative Bryce, you had asked that the commissioner talk us through the flow chart. For those people that are on teleconference, if you would make your description a little more detailed so that they have an idea of what we're doing, appreciate it.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd be happy to. The flow chart.
And just again, your name, please.
My name is Gary Bader. The flowchart reference, I believe, is the one in your packet for HB 82, and it's on page 12 of the packet. And essentially what this flowchart does, Representative Bryce, is outline the process, the current process under HB 37, which the state receives the request for capital grants and ranks them, and the various avenues of appeal open to school districts. Starting with the school district, in the upper left-hand corner of the flowchart, you see that they must submit their six-year capital plan and the request for grants to the department by September 1st. The department then places the grants into any one of seven categories that have been outlined earlier in our discussion here today. After the grants are placed in those categories, the grants within those categories are prioritized. Just an example of how what the department considers for priority one projects, they evaluate a report of the appropriate regulatory agency, fire marshal, DEC, etc. They look at the they take into consider any on-site reviews that may have taken place by the department, the district's ranking of the project, the project's need based on district's ability to provide alternatives, and so on. So it is subjective, but an attempt to be as objective as possible within that. If the department then publishes this, the list of our categories and the priorities within those categories by November 5th, if the district is dissatisfied with the results of the department's ranking or feels that the department erred, it can ask for a for reconsideration, and that reconsideration must take place before December 1st, so we have to be notified. So a public hearing is held on December 1st or before public testimony. The district can be represented by counsel if they choose or other types of experts. The department then issues a decision, a new list, based upon the results of the public testimony and public hearing. if the district is still dissatisfied or believes that there's an error in the list, the district may appeal the department's list. If the appeal, if the department receives an appeal, we have 15 days to appoint a neutral hearing officer, to appoint a hearing officer. The hearing officer then must holds the hearing, and if the and after the hearings are held, issues a report. The report on the appeals is provided to the state school board. The school board can either accept or reject the hearing officer's opinion. If the district is dissatisfied at that point, the recourse is to Superior Court.
Yes, Representative Bryce.
And you may note that that was the current system. Will that this system remain intact under your current with HB 82?
Yes, it would.
Yep. Okay. One last question. The commissioner appoints the hearing officer. Is that generally a member of the department, or is that from a school board affected, or who might that be?
This year, the hearing officer is a private attorney in Anchorage.
Okay.
It's not a state employee, and typically we have always gone outside the department seeking hearing officers.
Did you have a follow-up?
One last question. Your evaluation team, who makes up the evaluation team again?
There are three classified employees who make up the evaluation team this year. So they're all civil servants.
Uh-huh.
And
thank you.
If I may, I assume they are reasonably long-time employees of the department and knowledgeable in matters of education and need.
That's correct. I think the senior person on this year's team had something like 30 years in education.
Representative Tui, you had a question.
This is why government has a bad name. How many schools went through this process last year? Can you give me an off the record?
How many? There were 14 appeals that went to the first public hearing, or 14.
How many got to the end? I mean, did
there were three hearings conducted in Anchorage last week. The rest of the projects, I'm not quite sure what you mean by the end.
My question is, this looks like very expensive, very expensive. Somewhere along the line, somebody's gotten lost. It's not getting through. I mean, it's not doing what it should be doing. I can't believe that the process has to be this involved.
It's very similar to the process that is adopted in the state procurement code, where departments review the results of their employees' work, and then it goes to a private hearing officer.
Thank you.
By the way, there's no requirement that a school district appeal, and generally out of the 168 or 69 projects, 14 appeals, I don't think is a very large number of appeals.
No, well, that's the question I wanted to answer. Thank you.
We're on teleconference, that's right. First of all, I'm sorry that I was late coming to the meeting, but I got delayed because of some household goods I had to pick up today. I'm finally getting a place to live. First of all, I want to say that I'm delighted that we're having this kind of attention given to education, because this is something that I continue to hear people say that they care about, want to do something about, and this is this point, I feel good because there's going to be a lot of dialogue. It's happening early, and we're going to get some later on. I want to say, first of all, that I think the governor and the commissioner has done a good job putting their things together. It doesn't matter if I agree or not with where the money should come from. That's something that we as legislators will have to decide. But at least somebody has identified that there is a problem and that we need to put more money in. There's nothing wrong with House Bill 37. I don't have any ownership in the House Bill 37. I was not here when it went into law. I came down here saying that it wasn't working. And you know why it's not working? Because we didn't put any money in it the way we should. You put a little bit of money, you got all these priority one, two, three things, and we have never even completed the priority ones. You go down the list so far with the money that we allocate, and then that's all that gets done. So the problem is that we are not putting the money where it needs to be. And that's something that we will be able to address, whether we take it out of the earnings of the permanent fund or take it from the general budget or whatever we're going to take the money from. It does not matter. The point is we're on the right track. We need to put more money into our schools. Our schools are crumbling. They're older. I think this is the right step in the right direction. In the end, we'll decide, you know, where we're going to get the money. But I'm very supportive of the fact that we are addressing the issue that needs to be addressed. I'm not necessarily happy about the formula that's here. Anchorage won't get as much as I would like for Anchorage to get, but I'm not only here to represent Anchorage, I'm here representing all the kids in the whole state, so we have to take all that in consideration. But in the end, I think we'll get our things together in Anchorage too, and we'll be more concerned about making sure our things are in when we know that we're going to get some money. But it's hard to be filling out all the papers and doing all these things when you know you're not going to even be considered, because most of the things that Anchorage have been asking for didn't even come on the priority one list. So this is a way of beginning to tackle the problem, and I'm interested in hearing from my people in Anchorage as to what they think about it and how we're going to work with it. But I think we're on the right track.
Thank you, Representative Davis. We have another bill to discuss, and if there isn't further dialogue on House Bill 82, we'll move on to House Bill 83. Again, just for the record, we don't plan to take any action on these bills today. We're just simply gathering information, and appreciate the folks on teleconference being with us, and if they have comments that they'd like to get to the committee in the form of written testimony, I certainly encourage him to do that. So having said that, Commissioner Covey, could we go on to House Bill 83?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, House Bill 83 is an act making appropriations to the construction and major maintenance of schools. In effect, it's an appropriations bill. It has two parts. It directs $107,688,000 to the school construction grant fund, and it directs that money at life, health, safety, and on-house students, essentially. It also has a second section which directs some $42,312,000 to fund major maintenance repairs in many of our public schools throughout the state. This bill is simply the appropriations bill that goes along with House Bill 82.
That's all right. Thank you, Commissioner Covey. With that, let's open to questions. Representative Bryce.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. My purpose for asking questions relating to the appeal process and the decision-making process comes to is basically due to what we see here in HB 83, where we have on page 2, lines 17 and 18, a project for the Fairbanks North Star Borough Schools that I don't believe is of grave concern to the local school district at this point in time, while schools that are of much more importance to the area are put back 2 to 3 years. And I guess, as Representative Toohey had pointed out, that the appeal process is such a headache and probably time-consuming and just tough to get through, they decided to leave that as is and let our higher priorities fall back 2 or 3 years. Could you comment?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Rice, if I may, generally I would say that the problem that has been experienced by Fairbanks is a problem that other districts have to some degree. We are constrained by the process, by the regulations in place, and how we rate and evaluate these projects. And it has happened, and the case you're referring to, I think, is an example of how, at the local level, a project can be rated high, higher than other local projects, and then wind up on our list rated lower than other projects. And it falls into where does it fit in terms of what are the violations, or where does it fit in terms of on-house students versus health and life safety needs. Those are the constraints that under the current process we are bound by.
Yeah.
And that, in general terms, would explain the situation. We're well aware of that, and as we've met with people from school districts and with other legislators, they've indicated to us an interest in revisiting the criteria that we're using to prevent that type of thing in the future.
Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner. I might say that I don't share my colleague's concern about the intricacy of the appeals process, because to me it allows the district a lot of opportunity to shape how they're going to be handled by the appropriations out of the district and the priorities out of the district. So it's not it's maybe not efficient, but it gets a lot of opportunity for redressing questions. Other questions concerning House Bill 83 for Commissioner or his staff? Representative Gary Davis.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the list of projects, there's quite a few repair items. In the new construction funding bill for new schools, is there a mechanism where the individual school districts will be responsible for all future repairs, or is that still going to fall on the state?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, in our proposal, future funding would require districts to demonstrate to us that they did have an adequate maintenance program in place to show that they were taking care of things locally in order to qualify.
If I might, just a statement, there's been, I believe Representative Toohey indicated that some schools are leaking and bad roofs and things like this, and a lot of them are new schools where there was faulty construction. I feel strongly that it should be each independent school district's responsibility for the construction and bonding requirements, performance bonds from those contractors. I would hate to see the state be responsible for that. So I want to see that continued, where the local districts are held accountable and make sure that the construction is done properly and adequate. And if not, then there are insurance payment performance bonds that will allow them to have those facilities corrected.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, Representative Davis, we share your concern there and are working along those lines.
I think many of us on the committee feel that the best government is that's closest to the local people, perhaps the most efficient as well. Representative Veazey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to ask Commissioner Covey, I do have a number of questions, and I really don't want to take up the committee's time going over them. Who in your department could I talk to about some of the questions that will come up?
If I might interrupt, Representative Veazey, I think that the rest of the committee would be well served by the questions that you might address if you don't mind addressing them now.
I appreciate that, Mr. Chairman, but the reason I want to talk to somebody who knows a little more about this than I do is I'd like to formulate the questions.
I understand.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Veazey, Gary Bader, to my left, and or Dwayne Guiley would be happy to work with you. Gary's immediately in charge of that. Dwayne's worked in the development process with the committee, so
they'd be happy to work with you.
And again, this, of course, is just our first hearing. There are some major issues we're facing, and we may well have an opportunity to come back as I kind of view it as an ongoing and developing plan, and we'll have further information and certainly further questions as we go along. Other questions for, yes, Representative Rice?
One quick one, sort of tongue-in-cheek. How happy or how close are you to the prioritization of these projects? Or is this list firm, or is there going to be some shaking and moving around on it?
Well, let's see if I can do this tongue-in-cheek also, Mr. Chairman. We have provided you the list, which we are required to provide, and we are constrained to that list as you see it. Of course, the legislature, you know, as I guess I could wrap it up by saying this, we wanted to bring you a plan that we felt was rational and close with the realization that you have final authority to make changes.
Representative Rice, if I could translate that for you, hunting season is open. Representative Toohey.
May I have just a small request of your department? Would you please put, thank you, would you please put the date the school was built on this list, and also what the capacity at time of construction and the capacity at present date? Okay, and I really would feel that find that very helpful in any dealings we have with construction or with repairs and maintenance of school. I think when it was built, it's very needy. Thank you.
Perhaps a third item we could add to that list is also that is enrollment. And perhaps a third item we could add to that list would be enrollment.
That's what I...
Capacity. Difference between capacity and enrollment.
Oh,
Representative Nicolai.
Yes, this is Representative Nicolai, and I'd just like to comment that I did visit some of these schools on this list, and there was a need. And I'm very happy to see that the governor and your staff is addressing these needs. And it's very disappointing to go into a school and see that they have a vocational educational facility, but because they're not up to code, because of the way it's built, and because for other fire safety reasons, they cannot hold these classes. And I think that is a deficit, and it's shortchanging our students in our districts. And I'm just happy to say that I'm just happy that you have these appropriations bill. And I look forward to seeing you all again, and thank you for putting this bill.
I just second the notion there that probably even a greater frustration than not having facilities is to have a facility that you can't use. It
right.
Sort of rubs one wrong. Representative Gary Davis had a question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd just like to protect the interests of my district. And I'd like on page 3, item 9 and 10, it's been my understanding that the Tustamina School is the number one priority as far as the school district. Is that item addressing the Tustamina problem? Kenai Peninsula Borough Schools portable classrooms district wide?
This was one of the projects that was...
excuse me, for the record, this is Gary Bader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is one of the projects that was moved up as a result of the public hearings and the determination that that this was a situation where the portable classrooms have so exceeded the core capacity of the facility that it got into this category. I would have to look specifically at the grant request from the school district to see what's proposed.
Other questions for Commissioner or his staff? Representative Gary Davis.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Page 2, item 24, where is that school district at? please.
That's in western Alaska.
That narrows it down to about a million square miles.
Southwestern Alaska, near Bethel, that general area.
Thank you. YK Delta. And are there any further questions for Commissioner Estep? Is there anyone else present who would like to testify on this matter? Hearing none, this meeting is adjourned at 4:04. We thank you for your participation, both on teleconference and Commissioner Covey and Estep.
I appreciate it.